Going to talk about victorious living under imperfect authority. Let's start off by looking at the word authority. If you will, just quickly for me, list various sources of human authority. You just name some. Government. Parents. Church. Employer. Police. How about the guy you're driving down the road says construction ahead and there's some guy with no education with a flag? And I don't mean that when I say no education. I'm not trying to degrade that person, but that person has authority. Now, let's go through this biblical list. You have it listed there, and I just want to cover this so we understand that the Bible lists a lot of people. Children, obey your parents. Wives, submit to husbands. Church members, submit to pastors. Employees, to employers, especially when the employer is Christian. Everybody, submit to the government. All believers, submit to each other. All believers are to submit to God. Now, will any of these be perfect? Why or why not? What do you think? No. Well, why or why not? They're all people. So, can't they be perfect? Why not? Fallen world, they're all sinners. So, the curse of sin means that every one of these sources of authority will not be perfect. All right, now that's kind of an established point. It's a given, if you will. Let's move on and talk about the natural human response when you think an action of the authority is wrong. And we're going to talk about this through a biblical account, if you will. Let's look at Habakkuk. We're going to go to an Old Testament book. In case you have trouble finding it, it's a fifth book back from the Old Testament. I mean, from the end of the Old Testament. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk. We want to talk about Habakkuk a little bit this morning because here's an excellent illustration of a human response when you think the authority is wrong. Now, let me read the first four verses. The burden which the prophet Habakkuk saw. O Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear, even cry out to you? Violence, and you will not save. Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. Therefore the law is powerless, and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore perverse judgment proceeds. And what he is doing is describing the problem from a human perspective. And the human perspective is, there is gross evil in the land of Israel, and it seems like God is doing nothing about it. And basically, he evaluates it and says, God, you're wrong. He said, I've asked you to do something, and you don't respond. And he says, why do you allow evil or permit evil to go along, to continue? His human logic disagrees with God allowing the condition to go on and seems to do nothing about it. And to him, it seems ridiculous. To him, it doesn't make sense. Now, think about it. What he's doing is he's arguing with God about God's actions. He's saying, basically, God is wrong not to do something about the condition in which Israel is living. Well, God responds, and God says, look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe, though it were told you. And what God is saying, I'm aware of it, and I'm going to handle it, but you won't believe what I'm going to do. You will be so astounded, you won't even like what I'm going to do. God has planned an appropriate response to this evil. Now, I'm going to summarize these verses, but what he's saying is, I'm going to bring punishment on the children of Israel through the Babylonians, the Chaldeans. Well, that kind of astonishes Habakkuk. He's gotten his question answered, but look at verse 13. He says, you are of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a man more righteous than he? And even though God has responded to Habakkuk's question, he still applies human logic to the situation. and he's astonished, he's bewildered, he cannot reconcile the character of God with this plan, and basically says, what are you doing? This is a terrible solution. Why does God punish people? Why does God punish his people with people who are more wicked than they and more terrible than they? And he described that, the condition of the Babylonians a little bit in verses 6 to 9. And what's happening, he concludes this is a very harsh, incorrect answer. He's really arguing with God now. He doesn't like God's answer. See, human logic, human reasoning, and let's not miss that. Human logic, human reasoning says God is wrong. And he basically, you know, he said that doesn't make sense, first of all, that God wasn't doing anything. And then when God provides an answer, he said, it doesn't make sense to me. You know, still human logic. That's not the way I would do it. And he continues his complaint. We go to verse 1 of chapter 2. He says, I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I am corrected. And he compares himself to a watchman standing as a sentinel upon the city walls. And he's prepared to wait for God's answer and to ponder his reply and figure out what am I to say to answer in respect to my complaint against Jehovah. And basically what he's doing is he's going to wait and see if he likes what God's doing this time any more than he liked the previous answers. God's answer and God's goal is God will be glorified. He answers with a vivid description of the punishment of the Babylonians. The Babylonians will do this, but he's going to punish them. And his statement to these people, his statement to the Babylonians, and what he's going to do to them is summarized in verse 8 of chapter 2. Because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the people shall plunder you because of God's blood and the violence of the land and the city and of all who dwell in it. The end result is that God will be glorified through all of this. Verse 20 of chapter 2. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence through him. See, even though to human reasoning and human logic, it seems unreasonable, God is in control. God has a plan that will glorify himself and it's best for the people. And Habakkuk learns that God is in control and God intends to use all human authority to accomplish his purposes. The problem is that Habakkuk's authority that he's dealing with is God, who is absolutely perfect, absolutely flawless, and never fails. He looked at the way the authority was responding. He considered it automatically wrong. See, he looked at what the authority was doing. He considered it automatically wrong because it didn't follow his logic. It didn't follow his understanding of God. And he concluded it was wrong. Now, that's kind of an illustration. We're going to build on that. We're not going to refer to it particularly again, but I want us to get the idea that the thing we're struggling with is not something new. Here was a man who struggled with it with God. So we come back to these human things today. Now, let's talk about some contemporary responses. List some situations, if you will, in which it's difficult to submit to authority. What are some situations? When the authority is wrong, Mike? Yeah. That's especially a problem when they don't agree with us. When else is it difficult to submit to authority? When the authority is harsh. When they're asking to do something it's hard to do or we don't want to do. When it seems to us it's going against God's word. Yeah. See, they make a decision that you don't like, you disagree, you think, oh, here's another one. When you think the method of reaching the decision was wrong, you may like the decision, but you don't like the method by which they used to reach a decision. When the authority communicates to you in a way you don't like somebody said, harsh or blunt or lacks gentleness, when you think you have been falsely accused, when the authority